Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
This is Gerard Gibbert, and thank you for listening to Middays here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Middays with Gerard Gibbert is on the air. Middays with Gerard Gibbert is powered by C Spire. Power your home or business with C Spire fiber. To learn more, visit supertalk.fm/C Spire. C Spire fiber powers Super Talk Mississippi.
Get ready. Get ready to go beyond the headlines and join a meaningful conversation with people from around the state. Hello. You're listening to Middays with Gerard Gibbert here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Everyone, and welcome to Midday Super Talk Mississippi. I'm your host, Gerard Gibbert, along with Will East, in for the vacationing rhino. We're in the Element Wealth Studio, where we'll be guiding you through the middle of your day with facts, fodder, and fine music. Morning there, Will.
Morning. Very busy news weekend, wasn't it?
Yeah. You know, we've been on the road. We took the show on the road last week, Thursday and Friday. It feels like I've been gone forever for some reason when you combine that with the weekend. But we're all here, ready to go. Of course, it's Monday, two-hour show. Ricky Matthews, Super Talk Outdoors, comes your way at 12:05 today. But in the meantime, you're right. It just seems like every Monday we come in here and crank the show up, there's just an avalanche of news that occurs over the weekend. I guess we got to start with the prostate cancer diagnosis for the former president,
that
Joe Biden.
That was the
biggest
story, yeah.
And that broke. It's the timing of it is suspicious. First, of course, we hope and pray for a complete and full recovery for the former president. It's a tough situation to deal with. You know, when you get on up there in age, you know that's always a possibility. Prostate cancer is very common in males, recommended to get screened at the age of 50 and beyond. The simple blood test, PSA test, indicates whether or not there's a possibility. There are some acceptable ranges for that blood test. But there certainly, when you get to a point where you got stage four and it's metastatic, and it typically does first spread to the bone, goes into the lymph nodes and finds bone. That's how prostate cancer specifically metastasizes, is first to the bone. And there's all kinds of treatment. I mean, it's unbelievable the advances in technology. Like all other cancers, it's key to catch it early. Well, the fact that he's got stage four and it's metastatic, it's virtually impossible for that not to have been detected years ago, honestly.
Yeah.
And there are widely held beliefs in the medical community, in particular in the oncology community, that if you were to biopsy the prostate of an 80-year-old man and up, 80% of them, they said, you'd find cancer. But it's slow growing. And the thought process is, you know, something else is likely to cause this individual to eventually pass away because of their age before this prostate cancer gets them. In fact, I think the standard now is once you get to 70, I don't even think they do the PSA test anymore. The blood test. It's recommended not to do it because it's kind of considered useless at that point, even if you were to detect cancer. So if something's fishy about this.
Well, and the other thing that's kind of weird is it comes on the heels of the news that broke on Friday, when the audio from the Robert Hur investigation into former President Biden, or then President Biden, was released. And the audio, if you'll remember, this was a big, big deal because Robert Hur, the special investigator that got appointed, released transcripts. So words, text, and people, the people on the left, lambasted him for it because he characterized the president as having a fuzzy memory and not always being there and et cetera, et cetera. He got lambasted for it. This was in 2023. Well, the audio was leaked to Axios on Friday, and you can hear it.
Yeah.
And clearly, I listened to a lot of that. I don't know if you did, Gerard, but clearly he is just very confused. And the most famous or the most infamous clip to be released from this, basically Biden says, Robert Hur asks him, where did you keep the documents? That was the question. Where do you keep the documents? 4 minutes of answer follows in which he does not even come close to saying where I keep the documents. He goes into when did President Trump get inaugurated? When did my son die? You know, this, that, the other. He clearly was confused on all that stuff, had to be helped. And so you have all that news on Friday, and then on Sunday afternoon you get this news about the cancer diagnosis.
I mean, it does feel like there's a bit of a method to the madness here, that there's a cover-up going on. And you just wonder, because you got a person who probably has more review of their health, more checkups on their health than anybody else in the country.
I mean, they actually release it to the public.
Right.
Usually
exactly.
The president's
health status. Yeah. Because the American people deserve to know the health condition of their president. Now, what's also interesting about this is that you also had our Secretary of Defense, remember, who had a prostate cancer diagnosis. His name escapes me right now, but that was withheld from the public and was still serving as the Secretary of Defense, and that was Lloyd, wasn't that his name? I can't remember it off the top of my head. But nonetheless, that was also very suspicious. Yeah. Now we have this.
And this also comes on the heels, again, of there's this book that's being released by Jake Tapper of CNN and Alex Thompson of Axios where they're talking about the cover-up. Now, they're not implicating the media in the cover-up, by the way, which they were kind of a part of. They're talking about the White House aides. That book has just been released, and it's been a hot topic of conversation. And a lot of the media members are trying to play cover-up for themselves by grilling the Democratic establishment, especially like Chuck Schumer. He was on CNN. I don't know if you saw that clip, but
I did.
He refused to answer it. So you have all this news going on, and then finally this cancer diagnosis. And, of course, then you had the boat crashing into the Brooklyn Bridge. I mean, it's just been a very news-heavy weekend.
Lloyd Austin was the guy I was thinking about. Just hit me. But
that was a weird
thing. Yeah, this would be the biggest playing of the American people scam of all time if it turns out that the administration covered up, withheld, concealed an aggressive cancer diagnosis of the president, because more than likely it was detected around the time he became president or possibly even prior, even given the aggressive nature. That's just the way prostate cancer works. There's no way that just like happened last week. You show up, not the president. Now, someone who doesn't get tested, sure, and that's the problem, is it men don't get tested. And then they show up, and there's something going on, and they go to the doctor, and they find, you got prostate cancer, and you've let this go. We didn't know about it. Now you're at an advanced level, and the treatment is more difficult, if not virtually impossible. So it's like all cancers. We've got marvelous technology and medical treatment for almost all cancers, but it's key to, of course, detect it early. And the same is with prostate cancer, which is very easy to detect. It's just unlikely that he just literally showed up last week and said, oh, yeah, I got stage 4 metastatic prostate cancer. That's just inconceivable, honestly. Yeah. And it's disturbing. It will be disturbing if we ultimately find out that it was withheld from the American people. If that's the case, and I don't want to get ahead of ourselves here, but this applies to the fact that they ran this guy for president and then pushed him to run for re-election until they finally said after that debate, yeah, this ain't going to work. But all the way up to that point, but all throughout his presidency, and I sent you some sound. We'll play it in the program later today. But all throughout the presidency, those around him were constantly clamoring, oh, he's sharp as a tack. You can't keep up with him. You remember all that stuff?
Absolutely.
And that's
more,
a cover-up.
And you know what? After that Robert Hur transcript got released in 2023, Biden himself came out and damned.
He sure did.
Robert Hur, saying, how dare you accuse me of not being able to remember? Well, the audio clearly shows that he didn't remember when his son died.
But that was prior to the release of the audio. The audio is empirical evidence and very damning, if you will. We're stepping aside for a break. We're just getting started on Middays. It's Gifford Briggs, American Petroleum Institute representative for the Gulf Coast region at 11:05. Once again, we're in the Element Well studio. Stay with us. This segment of Middays with Gerard Gibbert is brought to you by Covington County Hospital in Collins, where your health matters.
Now back to Middays with Gerard here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Welcome back, everyone. It is Middays. So this just looks like a cover-up. It really does. And it's disturbing that this country would have to endure that. That's just so counter to American traditions, values, and standards. This is the kind of stuff that happens in so-called banana republics, not in the United States
of
America.
I mean, think about it. The president was not healthy.
No,
and
exactly.
The administration, the aides, actively covered it up.
Yep.
Media members went along with it, either took the aides at their word or knew about it and helped cover it up.
Yep.
And now they're trying to wash their hands of it. The media is, at least. It's insane.
It's disturbing.
Gerard, everybody saw it.
Yeah, everybody knew it.
Cheap fakes. That just blows my mind.
And they kept telling us that, you know, just go away. It was just super gaslighting is really what it was. Man, oh, man. Really disturbing and disappointing. Just disappointed in our government in general that they would keep stuff like this from the public. But it's a function, I believe. You know, the left always likes to lecture us about greed, corporate greed, and all that sort of stuff. This is the most egregious form of greed, and that is political greed. It was selfishness. Anything and everything to capture control of the White House and then get this guy in, prop him up, conceal the truth, play the charade, gaslight the country. That's exactly what they did. And it's scary to think about, this is the person that is in charge of the country? It's just incredible. And then you listen to what little audio has been released at this point. You just can't believe that this guy was actually in charge, in the center of power. In the White House. He could hardly form sentences that with any coherence, for sure. Couldn't recall details. And, yeah, as Mose and a couple others pointed out, he said something about having cancer. And, of course, they tried to cover that up. And it's unclear. Was he talking about a prostate cancer diagnosis he just received? You know, their official statement was, no, we're talking about skin cancer that he had prior. Was it just a slip-up? Because it was, I have it, present tense, not I had it. I don't remember the exact sentence structure and the language, but it was from a present perspective. And that's disturbing. But that's what we got.
I mean, they would go so far as to assign media members questions. We all saw the images of the little pamphlet they would hand then President Biden of a picture of the person and how to pronounce their last name and the question they were going to ask and his answer.
Yeah.
They would go so far as to change transcript. Think about this. They change the official transcript. So anytime the president says something, they transcribe it. They put it on the website. You can go read it. But they would go and they would make little changes here and there.
I know.
When he would, you know, make it a little bit more clear than it actually was.
That's just really, really a problem. And the American people should never be subjected to that sort of situation again. And I think you're likely to see some even on the left who are going to come out and maybe do a little bit of a mea culpa here. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but there was a lot of people involved in this cover-up. There's no doubt about it. Did you get that sound I sent you? Let's see if we can cue that up, because this is a montage, couple of minutes, and you'll recognize many of the voices. And this is what they were saying, people in the administration, Secretary of Treasury, Nancy Pelosi, others, Mayorkas, the Homeland Security guy, what's his name, the Attorney General as well, Merrick Garland. These are all featured in this sound. Here we go.
Does the president have the stamina, physically and mentally, do you think, to continue on even after 2024?
Don, you're asking me this question. Oh, my gosh. He's the president of the United States. You know, I can't even keep up with him.
The most difficult part about a meeting with President Biden
Mayorkas
is preparing for it, because he is sharp, intensely probing, and detail-oriented and focused.
I can testify, because I've been working very closely with this president for the past 2 years. I've been knowing him for 30 years. And I'm telling you, this guy's tough. He's smart. He's on his game.
Joe Biden has vision. He has knowledge. He has a strategic thinker.
The president is focused. He's detail-oriented. He's always thinking about the big picture.
Representative Garcia.
He is capable. He has an incredible record as president.
And I'm often with him on foreign trips. He's at the top of his game.
So he has a vision. He has knowledge. He has judgment. He has a strategic thinking.
I met with the president, I don't know, 5 or 6 weeks ago, and he seemed fine to me.
I have complete confidence in the president.
Garland.
I have watched him expertly guide meetings of staff and cabinet members. I could not have more confidence in the president.
I would just tell you that
General Milley,
frequently with the president, and every single time I meet with him, he is just fine.
But he is, knowledgeable, wise.
Incredibly sharp, incredibly probing, incredible command of the details.
He is sharp. He is on top of things.
There is nothing to these challenges, these suggestions that somehow
Senator Coons.
He's not sharp and he's not capable.
We see Joe Biden up close. We know how attuned he is to the issue.
And you're going to see how smart he is and
Jill.
The experience he has.
I say his age is an asset.
He's wise.
Yes, he's wise. He has wisdom.
Man.
He has experience.
So there you go. I mean, that's a collection of cover-up people is what that was.
Wow.
It's just incredible. So I have Janet Yellen. Of course, Nancy Pelosi was featured about 5 times in that clip. Merrick Garland, the Attorney General. Mayorkas, the Secretary of Homeland Security. Senator Chris Coons, Representative Garcia. Just a collection of selfish people. That's the way you describe it. You know you're telling a lie here. You know none of that's true. Karine Jean-Pierre, White House Press Secretary, top of his game, so probing. There's no way. You can't listen to that montage and that analysis and then listen to his interview with her and his inability really to form coherent statements and to recall simple details and confusion about when he was president, vice president, and his son, et cetera. And so you can't really blame him as much, in my view, as those in his inner orbit that pushed him, that thrust him into this. And because they wanted, they personally wanted all the various spoils and fame and other enrichment and benefits associated with being the president. And they're the ones that just thrust him into that. And I think to some extent convinced him that he was just A-OK, top of his game.
And convinced Jill Biden.
No doubt about it. I think she wanted to be president worse than he did, if you want to know the truth. That's President Jill Biden. You might as well say.
I mean, towards the end there, I mean, she was sitting in on cabinet meetings. She chaired a cabinet meeting.
That's
I
right.
mean, think about that.
It's insane. So it's, it's kind of a dark part of our history in this country that we elected this guy, that we allowed this to happen, and then there was this massive, well-orchestrated cover-up by the media, by cabinet secretaries, by the press secretary, by everybody associated with the president and that worked directly with him, who you know had the same thoughts as we're to share in here. Now, something ain't right about this deal.
What you're seeing right now with the media is them trying to distance themselves.
Big time.
They're trying to distance themselves. They're trying to ask. Now they're asking the tough questions, trying to go, well, you know what? We were out here looking out for you, Mr.
Right.
John Q. Citizen.
So I may be exaggerating a little bit when I say maybe we'll get some mea culpa out of this, but I'm certainly not exaggerating about what you're saying, what you're describing, that we're likely to see, which is just a continued sort of distancing and separation of the media from their love affair with Biden and the Biden administration. They're full gear focused on their Trump derangement syndrome at this point, and their contempt for this president. All right, we got the one big beautiful bill. It passed out of the budget, the House Budget Committee, and now is headed to the floor. Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, he's got his work cut out for him on that. We'll do a little review. There's some nuances about the taxation of tips and overtime that we got to share with you. Might not be as exactly as you expect. We're coming right back in the Element Well studio.
You're listening to Middays with Gerard Gibbert, here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Welcome back, everyone. It's Middays. We are in the Element Well studio. Are you thinking about or planning for retirement? Do you have a plan? Go to myelementwealth.com or call 601-957-6006 to let Element Wealth help you find your balance between income, growth, and guarantees. Don't forget the C Spire text line is open, 601-879-4395. So, Moody's went ahead and joined the other two credit rating agencies and downgraded the credit of the United States, citing concerns about continuing deficits and interest costs. So the markets didn't like that, although they started out down. Both the NASDAQ and the Dow were in negative territory, nearly at the down 300-point mark. And it's hard to tell if it was based on that news or a little profit-taking given the run-up in the markets last week. Currently, though, the NASDAQ down 70 points. The Dow is down 30, 40 points. But here's something to be a little concerned about. So it's they've paired their losses. They've trimmed their losses. The 10-year yield, and that's the Treasury bond that is tied to mortgage rates. It's nearly 4.6%. It's up. So that being up more than 4.5% is a concern. The long-term bonds up around the 5% mark. So we're going in the wrong direction there. If you're certainly if you're interested in buying a house or a car, something that you're going to finance, we're going in the wrong direction as far as lowering the interest costs associated with that purchase. So that's indeed a concern. Some of that is, yeah, it's 4.496, the 10-year. That, again, is the maturity of Treasury securities, the 10-year, that is used to price interest rates for mortgages. And that's going in the wrong direction. It's largely thought that because consumer sentiment still remains down. Americans in recent polls say they're still not feeling good about their situation. They don't see that inflation has cooled significantly. They are concerned about the impact of tariffs on their future buying power. So all that's figuring into what has been one of the worst consumer sentiment studies. The University of Michigan does that on a periodic basis for quite some time. So I think that consumers are saying, yeah, I need to see more relief in the grocery store. I need to see more relief at the gas pump. I need to see mortgage rates come down, et cetera, before they feel better about their situation. All of that's kind of figuring in to what's going on with the markets, and certainly with respect to interest rates. Inflation's still a bit sticky, though it's down considerably, no doubt. Last reading, about 2.5%, still not at the 2% target the Federal Reserve aspires to before they'll take any action with respect to reducing rates. Of course, the president has insisted that the Fed is acting late and should be reducing rates right now. I mean, he's called out Jay Powell as always being too little, too late. I'm not happy about the way Powell is running the situation either. I do think that he missed the boat back in 2022, where it was pretty clear we were poised for significant inflation. It hit 9% back then. That's after Joe Biden got in office and dropped money out of helicopters in 2021, and that just fueled inflation. And he being Jerome Powell and Secretary of the Treasury, Janet Yellen, were telling everybody it's transitory. I mean, and the Secretary or the White House Press Secretary at the podium every day, yeah, we're not worried about this, it's transitory. Well, they were all wrong. And Powell ends up acting in a tardy fashion by pumping up rates, and he couldn't get ahead of it, and so he kept raising, and that's where we are today with, again, the 10-year sitting at about 4.5%. So don't expect the mortgage rates to be coming down certainly anytime soon on that basis. Over the weekend, the one big beautiful bill, you recall last week it failed in the Budget Committee, and the Budget Committee chairman said, y'all go home. We're done. Go think about this. They brought them back. They had an all-nighter, 26 hours. Well, you saw the mockery of those sitting in their chairs sleeping. But in fairness to them, they were up 26 hours. I think most of us would likely maybe doze off a little bit if you're up 26 hours straight. So really, the finger ought to be pointed to, again, just the delay in addressing this, necessitating 26 hours. A voterama, if you will. And the Democrats just kept introducing amendment after amendment after amendment. It was insane. But the one big beautiful bill finally did pass out of the Budget Committee last evening. One approval from some key... Actually, it didn't even win approval from some holdouts. They voted present, which allowed the numbers to work so that the bill comes out of committee and is headed to the floor, a rather grinding process. I think what you can expect is a very contentious debate in the House with a slew of amendments and discussion from both sides. honestly. And I'll say that it was Chip Roy and a couple of others that you recall that torpedoed the deal to start with. I think five Republicans that voted no, and that's when the chairman said, hey, go home. Well, now they voted present, which allowed the legislation to pass out of committee. You know, I got to tell you, I stand in Chip Roy's court here, and here's why. He's the one that said that there need to be more spending cuts included. And there was a couple of other budget hawk rabble-rousers as well that were holding out for a better bill. Well, one of those areas is Medicaid. You've heard this, that Medicaid was on the chopping block. We started talking about this a year and a half ago when I felt like if you look at all the possibilities for and prospects for cutting spending, there are some opportunities to cut the Medicaid program because nobody's going to touch Social Security and Medicare. You can't mess with debt interest. The president wanted to increase spending on defense. Then you got the whole rest of government. Well, there are some cuts in there, but they're offset by the increases in the spending on defense, so that's a wash. So it pretty much relegates you to the Medicaid program. And what Republicans have stressed for quite some time is the imposition of work requirements for those able-bodied adults on Medicaid. That doesn't apply in Mississippi because that able-bodied adult coverage group, it is what is known as Medicaid expansion. 10 states haven't expanded, Mississippi being one of them. So it wouldn't affect us. But what the Republicans have included in the bill is, in fact, a work requirement. Now, you recall, Will, the debate last year in our legislature. The House passed a Medicaid expansion bill, and it went down to the Senate, and they ultimately couldn't get together, couldn't get anything done, but there was a call for work requirements associated with the expansion coverage group as a requirement. And the House said, okay, we're gonna get a waiver for that because you couldn't do it under the law without getting a waiver from CMS, the agency that runs the Medicaid program. And the concern was that, well, the Biden administration is not going to give you a waiver. They don't support work requirements. And the House said, yeah, but we're going to try, and even if we don't get it, we're still going to enact the legislation. It's still going to be implemented. And the Senate said, no, we're not going to do that. We got to have a work requirement or the thing doesn't get implemented. Well, that didn't even get touched this year in our legislature, largely because of the uncertainty around what the federal government was going to do with Medicaid. Well, here we got it. Now we know. So here's the deal. There is a work requirement for the able-bodied adult population included in the One Big Beautiful Bill for Medicaid. Here's the problem, though. It doesn't go into effect until 2029, when the president's term is ended. And what's likely to happen then? Maybe not likely. I don't want to jinx it. How about possible? That the Democrats are in control. So yeah. Guess what would happen? Oh, yeah, we're repealing that. So exactly. Chip Roy says, no, we need to make that go into effect immediately. I support Chip Roy in this effort. That makes sense to me. So that's why he held out, but he and the others voted present, which allows the legislation to get to the floor. So now the fun starts because you're going to see some up and down votes on a slew of amendments on the floor for the whole body, not just the committee. And we're going to know where folks stand on all these various thorny provisions, such as Medicaid work requirements. And bet your bottom dollar, the Democrats will go to the well and talk about how many people are going to die if we impose a Medicaid work requirement. Coming right back in the Element Well studio.
In Mississippi.
You're listening to Middays with Gerard here on Super Talk Mississippi.
That That's Alan Clark on lead vocals, The Hollies. What a great tune that is.
So, we got a second. Tell us about your, you're now a drummer.
Oh, my gosh. Use that term very loosely, right?
Are you going to leave us to go on tour?
Negative. It's been 40 years since I played the drums, and the House of Representatives has formed a band called the House Band, very appropriately. Very creative. We all voted on that, by the way, we had different ideas and suggestions, but we decided to stick with the House Band. Yeah, it's pretty cool. So they, Representative Dan Eubanks, Joe Tubb, Steve Lott, Noah Sanford, Chuck Blackwell, mm-hmm. all in the group. They're all musicians in their own right, play various instruments, also some vocals included there. Lance Varner, also. Didn't mean to leave Lance out. And they turns out they don't have a drummer within the ranks of the House. And somebody knew I did. I don't know how. I don't talk about it very often. I played drums for years in high school and college and haven't played since then, by the way. So it's been 40 years. And I've threatened, you know, sort of personally to go out and buy a kit because I enjoy it. It's just good recreation, and I put the headphones on, put the music on, you know, crank it up pretty loud and try to play along. And my wife's even been encouraging me, you know, just as something to kind of do. And so I get this call from Representative Eubanks about 6 weeks ago and inviting me. I said, what? So I don't have any drums. I had to go buy a drum kit. Drums are not cheap, by the way.
No, they're not.
I had to go buy a drum kit, and it took me about 4 hours to set that bad boy up. It's complicated putting drums together.
That's why I wanted to be the tambourine player. Yeah. You know? It's cheap and easy.
I need a roadie, by the way, to help me out. So I set it up in what I kind of call my study. It's really not sort of a man cave in my house that I built expressly for the ability to get away and crank the music up or whatever the case may be. So, yeah, I received a list of the songs that this group is supposed to play from Dan, and we have had a practice a couple of weeks ago. And honestly, I was pleasantly surprised. We weren't that bad.
What songs?
Yeah, so don't want to spoil it too much, but it's
or just a general idea.
It's kind of a country rock genre. Okay. We got a couple of CCR songs, yeah. For example, that are fun to play and good. And then we've got some just serious country music as well. You know, Don't Rock the Jukebox, for example.
Yeah.
And,
all right.
And Working Man Blues. I mean, it don't get more country than that. Those are a couple of examples. Keep on Smiling, which is kind of a country rock sort of tune, is another one. But my favorite, honestly, on the drums, it's just fun to play. It's a cool song for the drums, is Lynyrd Skynyrd, Red, White, and Blue. And, of course, I've been listening to these songs regularly. And I've got a whole house audio, and I do a lot of work in my yard. I enjoy that. And I've got the speakers all that sort of surround my area out there. And my wife says, boy, I'll be glad when you're done with this. I'm tired of hearing these songs. So we've got a playlist, and I've set it up, you know, in my Apple Music, and I can just hit that, and it just plays them one at a time. It's pretty cool, and I think it's a great selection. We're still sort of debating that a little bit, but I think we're fairly set on that. Yeah, I'm looking for it right now. It's pretty cool though, and these guys are they're good. Honestly, they're better than me, and the instrument's a lot better than I am too. The drums are a lot better than me. But it's neat. Country Club, Travis Tritt. That's another one. I'm a member of a country club. You know, that's Neon Moon, we're still debating on that one. Mustang Sally, Stand By Me, good tunes.
So some classics as well.
Yeah, no doubt. So, okay, so then the word gets out, hey, Gerard can play the drums, oh, geez. And I get a text a couple of weeks ago, about a month ago maybe, from Ricky Matthews. You know Ricky Matthews, hosts the Ricky Matthews Show on the Mississippi Gulf Coast here on Super Talk. And it's Ricky. It's a joint text, Ricky and Mayor of Gulfport, Billy Hughes. And there's an event that occurs every year. Honestly, I wasn't familiar with it. Fofo and Mofo's Monster Funkaholics One Coast Jam. And that's happening this Thursday. So they asked me to participate, and it's a combination of legitimate real musician bands and then some political figures and sort of celebrity guests, and I'm one of them. I don't know how I got that status, but I'm playing two songs along with the mayor of Pascagoula.
Ah.
And that's coming up Thursday. We have practice on Wednesday, so... And I've been practicing those two songs. I hope I don't embarrass myself or the group. But that's the story there. It's going to be fun. It really is. We're coming right back. There you go. The Hollies. Great tune. We're coming right back in the Element Well studio after Fox News and Super Talk News. It's Gifford Briggs with the American Petroleum Institute.
Hour of Middays with Gerard Gibbert is brought to you by the Mississippi Business Journal. Visit msbusinessjournal.com. Scott Coopwood, publisher and president.
Welcome to the show that challenges you to think deeply, and look beyond political posturing. You're listening to Middays with Gerard Gibbert here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Welcome back, everyone. It's hour two of Middays, now live from the Element Well studio. It's our pleasure to welcome now Gifford Briggs with the American Petroleum Institute. Hey, Gifford, thanks for coming on.
Thank you. What an exciting music intro right there. I mean, it's a Monday, and that'll get your blood flowing right there.
Man. Well, we kick off each of the 3 hours with a little Journey music because I'm a big Journey fan. So that's kind of the trademark there.
I love it.
But appreciate you coming on. So the governor of the great state of Mississippi, just out of the blue, announced this Power Up Mississippi initiative a couple of weeks ago, gathered various subject matter experts, industry representatives, together to discuss essentially bolstering the energy complement here in the state of Mississippi with an emphasis on diversifying our energy complex, even talking about embracing nuclear power as a part of our energy matrix in the future. As you well know, this artificial intelligence revolution is demanding lots of power. So how do we look there?
Yeah, I mean, I think the challenge we're facing right now is we need more now, and we need lots of it. I mean, it's a challenge that we haven't seen. If you look at the past decade, our electricity demand across the country has been pretty stagnant. You know, we've demanded more. We've gotten more efficient. So it's been flat overall.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden, you know, ChatGPT and AI and Grok and whatever has taken off, and the need for power is growing at an escalating rate.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And so it feels like the governor is wise here to sort of get out ahead of this and stimulate this, and not looking for a government solution, but bringing in the private sector, and also made it clear that, hey, a big goal here is to boost the state's economy. And having been involved in economic development here in the state, one of the things I've noticed is just changed in the last 5 years is that energy is like the new currency in recruiting industry. That's like gotten to the move to the top of the list, even above the supply of labor for many of these projects.
Well, look, for a long time it was, do you have access to labor? Do you have access to water? And you know, Louisiana and Mississippi are blessed with an abundance of both, right?
Yeah.
An incredible workforce, the Mississippi River, access to the Gulf, everything that you need. Now we're seeing something new. Do you have the ability to provide the power that is needed for these data centers, which need 24/7 reliable, abundant, cheap energy. And that's something the South and the Gulf Coast really excel at.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And so achieving energy independence, that's important as well, is it not, Gifford? You know, we produce a lot of oil here in the country, more than we ever have. Latest reports I've seen on a daily basis, we're up to, what, 13 yep. million barrels a day, but we still consume 18 million. And we also have this chemistry incompatibility problem with our refineries and the category of oil that we produce, especially with this fracking technology. And now the president has rescinded many of the regulations the Biden administration put in place, which makes our coastal waters more accessible for oil and gas exploration, as well as just federal lands, et cetera. But we're still shipping a lot of that overseas for refining. Isn't that correct?
That's correct. I mean, you know, there's a lot of talk about energy independence. Well, I think ultimately the goal is energy security, right? Can we refine, produce, or secure the energy that we need as a country? And you're right, our refineries are set up to produce and refine, for the most part, this heavy sour crude that's been coming out of the Gulf of Mexico and in the South for a long time. And when you look at what's going on in the Permian Basin, you know, other shale plays, it's high quality, light, sweet crude that really, we have a few refineries that can do it, but not many. So it's essentially a trade-off. We send that crude off to Europe. They send us back refined gasoline products in order to give us the balance. But what the revolution that we're seeing right now is, you look at the Haynesville Shale in Louisiana, you look at hydraulic fracturing and natural gas, and that is what is opening all of the doors. LNG exports, the power for all these data centers. Nuclear is important, and we want it. And long term, it's going to play a key part in the mix, but we haven't built a nuclear refinery in 50 some odd years.
Unbelievable.
A nuclear facility in 50 some odd years. And so, as they talk a lot about small modular nuclear reactors, that's great. But, you know, the policies aren't in place for that. The investment there. Before we get there, you know, clean burning, American produced Louisiana and natural gas, Mexico natural gas, that's going to be critical to be able to power the artificial intelligence. And again, this is a national security issue for us, right? We can't depend on nations that are adversarial for us to provide the artificial intelligence technology that we need. We have to build it ourselves. We have to have our own data centers, and we have to have energy to do that.
You wrote a great op-ed that you can find at our SuperTalk website titled "Mississippi is Shaping America's Path Forward in Securing U.S. Energy and AI Dominance." And it does feel that way. I mean, I'm pleased with the governor for stepping out and getting ahead of this and, again, bringing together all these leaders to discuss this issue. And the concern, of course, was during the Biden administration, they made it very clear, as do the Democrats in this country, they just want to completely abandon all fossil fuels. And maybe we can get there eventually, but we're still a long way away. We still need a traditional petroleum, and we have an abundance of it. You mentioned liquid natural gas. As I recall, the Biden administration early on put policy in place that prohibited the export of that, right, from certain areas like Pennsylvania, which is rich with liquid natural gas, and President Trump has rescinded that, and that's flowing again.
Yeah, they were stopping export the permitting of export facilities at the same time where our European allies were being shut off from Russia because of the war over there, and were left in a situation where they weren't going to have the energy. And so it was only because of the export facilities that we were able to support our allies in Europe when they were being shut off from energy. And so, you know, we need to continue to export, you know, American energy progress around the globe where we can. We need to continue to develop the resources. The reason why, you know, Facebook and Google and these companies are looking to states like Mississippi for AI development is because we have the pipeline infrastructure. We have the resources that we need, the energy to be able to support those. Whereas you look at other states in the Northeast, you mentioned, you know, Pennsylvania, they have an abundant supply of natural gas. They can't build a pipeline to bring it into New York, and New York has to import the natural gas. So it's very... very difficult for them to put a data center there when they don't have the resources. So the South, once again, is poised to rise up and meet the energy demands for our country, this time providing the energy that the data centers that are needed to power the AI revolution.
And we've got natural gas-powered turbines as well, do we not, that are being used to produce electricity, and that's being used a lot in new electrical generation projects.
Well, that's 100% right, and that's what a lot of these data centers are looking at. They're, you know, saying, you know what, build a pipeline, put a natural gas power plant right there on site to be able to provide the energy that these data centers need. Because, you know, look, our grid, the grid reliability is the concern, and one of the things that this, you know, the governor's energy task force is looking at, what do we need to do to our grid in order to grow it, improve it, and to meet the next generation. And so we can only put so much stress on our grid before we need new supply. And you know, natural gas and building a natural gas power plant for these data centers is a great way to do it.
We got a couple of power providers in Mississippi, and Entergy and TVA, that account for probably three-quarters of all the energy produced and consumed, electricity certainly, in the state of Mississippi, and they seem to be all on board. I mean, they're making investments, and Mississippi is a place where you can get through the permitting process pretty rapidly. They're making tremendous investments in new power generation and transmission.
Well, 100%. This is a growth opportunity for the, you know, traditional utilities that they haven't seen before, right? You get really excited when you put on a power plant, you know, or a new industrial facility. These data centers and the amount of energy that they consume and need for it 24/7 is a great growth opportunity for the utilities. And it's also creating opportunity for new players to come into the space to be able to provide, you know, off the grid power and, you know, in places where maybe it couldn't otherwise be done.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting, really. I think the future is bright, certainly for, as you say, not only Mississippi, but the entire South. This is where we've got some key assets that will carry us into the next wave of economic development. And I think we'll see massive investments here. Jeffrey, appreciate you joining us. That was insightful. And you know, folks, go read the op-ed, Mississippi is Shaping America's Path Forward in Securing U.S. Energy and AI Dominance, at Supertalk Mississippi. Thanks, Jeffrey. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it. Y'all have a good one.
You too. We're coming right back in the Element Well studio.
Middays with Gerard Gibbert.
Let's do this.
On Super Talk Mississippi.
Let's go.
Welcome back, everyone. Don't ruin this for the cowbell. That's one of the greatest skits.
There's not many songs that feature the cowbell.
That's right. I'm going to play the hell out of this cowbell. Will Ferrell. Man, that was so good. How did they keep a straight face doing that?
Well, some of them didn't. Yeah, I mean, Jimmy Fallon was in the back about to die, and so was a couple others.
Oh, man, Christopher Walken. What an unusual a character for him to play. You know, he's usually kind of a dark kind of
mysterious.
I got a fever. That's right. It can only be cured with more cowbell. It's awesome. Wow. So we're back with you in the Element Well studio. So a little information to pass on with respect to, I know most people are going to find this to just be useless trivia maybe, but Treasury securities, those are the debt instruments issued by the United States government. When the government borrows money, it receives that money from an investor in exchange for a security known as a treasury security. There are three categories: bills, notes, and bonds. And bills are used to describe all Treasury securities with a maturity of less than 2 years. 2 to 10 are notes, Treasury notes, and Treasury bonds are all those with a maturity greater than 10 years, like the 30-year bond, the 10-year note, the 2-year bill. Just a little information, and I don't know why they came up with that, honestly, that nomenclature, other than maybe when they're talking about it sort of randomly, it, you know that they're talking about short-term, medium-term, long-term,
yeah,
without saying 10-year, 30-year, 2-year, and so forth. So yeah. And there's also been some proposals to issue a 50-year, create a new 50-year Treasury bond. 50 years is a long time to lock your money up. But, of course, that would pay a higher interest rate. But it wouldn't be redeemable until after 50 years. There's been some financial and economic scholars, shall we say, that have suggested that given our debt situation, borrow money for a long period of time and lock into an interest rate for 50 years. Now, you'd have to pay a higher one because if I'm going to give you my money for 50 years, I'm going to have to get a lot of money because I can't access it. So that's why typically the interest rates on the 2-year, lower than the 10-year, lower than the 30. It's when they cross, that's when people get worried. It's when you have that sort of inverse relationship. You hear that talked about a lot. And that's because that's usually indicative of inflation. That's why. But just a little information there to share with you about the way the government borrows money. And unfortunately, borrows money to make ends meet because we're running $2.2 to $3 trillion deficits in this year. And we were discussing earlier the one big beautiful bill that went through. And it turns out that it was 4 Republicans that voted present that just last Friday, voted nay. Chip Roy, Andrew Clyde, Josh Breachin, and Ralph Norman voted present. They changed their votes from no's on Friday, and that is allowing the bill to come out of the Budget Committee, and the Rules Committee will hold its meeting this week, sometime midweek. It is expected that we'll tee up a vote on the floor by the end of the week. Now, I shared with you earlier that there's a bit of nuance associated with the exemption for the tax on tips. This was one of the campaign promises the president made, and overtime and Social Security benefits. So what the bill includes is not exactly an exemption. All right. First, nothing to Social Security except an additional, nothing with respect to Social Security benefits, except the bill does have an increase in the standard deduction for those who are receiving Social Security benefits if their income is less than $75,000 as an individual, $150,000 as a joint filing, a married couple filing jointly. So that's different than exempting those benefits from taxes. But with respect to tips and overtime, it's worth noting there's a difference between an exemption and a deduction. And what the bill includes is what's called an above-the-line deduction. Why is that important? Here's how it works, Will. Let's suppose that you're working overtime. You're eligible for overtime under the law, and you have a pay period in which you work overtime, and you get paid. Now, if it were an exemption, the overtime pay, and by the way, this only applies to the premium, not your standard pay that you worked in the overtime hours, only the premium. If you're paid, and by the way, to be eligible, your premium has to be time and a half. If it's time and a quarter, you don't get any benefit. It has to be time and a half, okay? So it's only the half that qualifies, and it's not an exemption, and I'm going to explain that in a second. It's a deduction. Here's what that means. With a deduction, you still have taxes withheld on your paycheck. You just have to then deduct it when you do your tax return next year. In this case, above the line, reducing your income before you start calculating your tax. That's the difference between an exemption and a deduction. If it were an exemption, that premium overtime pay wouldn't even be subject to tax withholdings when you get your paycheck. So you're going to pay the government throughout the year, and you got to file your tax return to get the deduction. And it's limited, by the way, the deduction is. I think it's, if I'm not mistaken, $10,000 or $20,000 bucks is the way it works. So that's a little different, and the same is true with respect to tips. Now, here's the other thing. All this stuff expires at the end of 28. It's only good for 3 years. It's not permanent because you can't make the numbers work to pass it with a simple majority in the Senate. So it's a little surprising that all these major provisions don't really have permanency in them. That's just something you need to be aware of. And the same is true with respect to an above-the-line deduction for auto loan interest if the vehicle was completed its final assembly in this country. And by the way, that phases out when your income exceeds $100,000 as single and $200,000 as joint. So it's not exactly kind of what was talked about during the campaign, but it is certainly it's an improvement. I mean, it's a tax savings measure, but you got to pay that taxes, and of course, it's still subject to Social Security and Medicare, as is your tips. And the overtime is as well. It's just federal income tax. By the way, unless there are changes in most states, still subject to state and local income tax, unless you live in a state that follows the federal government. Remember, we had a conflict here in the state of Mississippi with respect to immediate expensing that we had to fix a couple of years ago. And, of course, now we're phasing out the income tax. But during the interim, the question is, while we're in the process of phasing out the income tax, how will your taxes, your overtime, your tips pay, be taxed for state purposes in Mississippi? I don't know. I hadn't seen anything about that. Of course, you got to get the bill passed until the state could act. But maybe the state next year, if this thing passes, needs to think about aligning with the federal government. You follow what I'm saying with respect to state income tax so that you don't have that conflict, that reconciling difference is really what they call it. But it's temporary tax policy, unfortunately. It's not permanent. Now, the standard existing tax environment that's based on the 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, yeah, that's permanent. So to make that permanent, these other new provisions had to be made temporary. You follow what I'm saying? To make the math work. Yep. So you got permanency, which is good, which is great. For the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, the existing tax environment, everything stays like it is. But these other new tax benefits, tax savings, are in fact not permanent. They expire. And the same is with the Medicaid work requirements, you know, which is a cost-saving measure. It's crazy that doesn't go into effect until 2029. That's a lifetime, honestly. And, of course, that would essentially impose work requirements on all those who receive Medicaid in the able-bodied adult population coverage group, which doesn't apply in the state of Mississippi. But there's going to be more demand for more changes, I feel, even though these four Republicans, these budget hawks, which I applaud, said, yeah, okay, we'll let this thing come out of committee. I don't think they're done. I think we're going to see more debate. Coming right back in the Element Well studio.
Gerard Gibbert.
It is on.
On Super Talk Mississippi.
Welcome back, everyone. You're tuned in to Middays. We're in the Element Well studio. We had a whirlwind tour last week, Will, up in the Golden Triangle, and then headed on up to Itawamba Community College for graduation ceremonies. That was a nice trip.
Yeah.
Great people, and really good being with all the good folks at the Golden Triangle. Exciting announcement, 1,440-acre economic development site that's poised for new investment. Just as per our discussion with Mr. Briggs with the American Petroleum Institute, I think Mississippi is well positioned to receive more investment in new economic development projects. The Golden Triangle Link up there, Joe Max Higgins does a great job. He and, of course, the board of the Lowndes County Economic Development Group, we interviewed an individual from there, and, of course, the TVA, a critical partner in supplying energy to prospective organizations that would build on the site there. Mm-hmm. And then throughout the state, really, lots of good news with respect to economic development. And I agree with Gifford Briggs that our fabulous people, our rather lax regulatory, business-conducive regulatory and tax environment, got plenty of fantastic land and property for sites, abundant energy and proximity to where all that energy comes from. And again, a governor and industry experts, subject matter experts, leaders that are all on board with boosting Mississippi's energy footprint. All of this is going to, I think, bode well for the future of our state with respect to economic development, which I believe is the key to addressing all of our most critical issues, and that starts with poverty.
Yeah.
We still have to acknowledge we are the poorest state in the country, and how about one way to fix that problem, and that's to grow the state's economy. You're not going to pass any legislation that's going to, in the Capitol, is going to magically address our poverty problem.
That's right.
That's something that's been lingering for quite some time that we definitely got to get a hold of, and we need to address that by growing our economy and creating opportunities and producing wealth.
Yeah.
And that's what economic development does.
Governor Reeves had an announcement just a few hours ago. I don't know if you saw that. He says more Mississippi momentum on a Monday. Today we're announcing that Modine is investing over $38 million in creating 450 jobs in Grenada County.
That's awesome. Yeah. So that's totally awesome. And that's just another example of what we're talking about here, is that these companies are finding that Mississippi is a dang good place to do business. And even though it may not be super obvious, I do believe, Will, that with Amazon Web Services making the announcement and deciding to invest tens of billions of dollars in the state of Mississippi, that got everybody's attention. It's not just the investment unto itself that we will benefit from, but it's the fact that, wait, Mississippi's good enough for them to build these hyperscale, super sophisticated, advanced technology data centers powering the AI revolution. We might better take a look at what they got going on in Mississippi. There's no doubt that happens. No doubt that is playing a critical role. And so I thought from the beginning when the announcement was made that don't think about this just as kind of an exclusive investment that's siloed. Think about the economic outgrowth that will occur as a result of this. So it has definitely got the heads turning in a good way. So that's super cool. Really excited about it and our prospects, no doubt. Something else that we should also pass on with respect to the One Big Beautiful Bill is that
I love that everybody's calling it that.
I know it. The president has so named it, and we've all followed his lead. This is just a budget package, so is what it is at the end of the day. It's now forever etched in our, seared in our brains that it's the One Big Beautiful Bill. I know, that's crazy. The Affordable Care Act subsidies, those were boosted, enhanced in the dumb Inflation Reduction Act. And all that really means is that the cost of coverage, health care coverage purchased in the exchanges for those who qualify The subsidies, by the way, are not a set dollar figure that the government just gives you to buy insurance. Rather, it is calculated as a percentage of your household income. So your premiums are equal to whatever that percentage is of your household income. And when the enhanced subsidies went into effect under the Inflation Reduction Act, the first layer of those is zero. So that percentage went from 2% to 0%. And then it escalates from there. It used to be 2, 4, 6. I don't remember all the various levels and brackets. But based on your income, the higher your income was, the higher was the percentage, meaning you're expected to pay for more of your coverage. The government says, yeah, your premiums are limited to this percentage of your income. Well, right now, if your income is below 150% of the federal poverty level, that's 0%. You pay nothing. So that's going away at the end of the year. That expires at the end of the year. It was passed in the Inflation Reduction Act. It is not included in the one big beautiful bill for continuation. So all that's expiring. You're about to see a whole bunch of wailing and pearl clutching and gnashing of teeth coming from the Democrats that are going to complain about the end of the enhanced subsidy model. They're going to go crazy over this. There's no doubt about it. You just hadn't heard it yet. Now, one of the more controversial aspects of the bill, in my view, is these new MAGA accounts. And those are kind of interesting. And the bottom line is that this is an extension of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act from 2017. And what it says is that the government is going to make a $1,000 contribution to an account whenever a baby is born, and that just sits in an account. You can't access it. And the parents of that baby can contribute on a tax-free basis $5,000 annually to this account. The idea is the government's going to give you $1,000, you contribute $5,000 tax-free, okay? So, and then when the child turns 18, it's accessible. That account's accessible. They've got this nest egg already built up for them. Now, again, the government's only giving you $1,000. You can contribute up to $5,000 tax-free to be accumulated in the name of the child that cannot be accessed until they're 18. You know who the author of this is? Ted Cruz. He's been pushing this for years. Yep. And so that's being incorporated, the senator from Texas, of course. I'm not sure how I feel about that one, honestly. I'm not opposed to the tax exemption or the after-tax contribution, the $5,000. I don't know if I agree with the government just giving everybody $1,000 when they have a child that they can't access. Now, it's not instant money. Just be clear about that.
Yeah, because that's an issue if it was instant.
That'd be a huge problem.
You know, people have proposed, you know, encouraging marriage by giving, because that's another issue, by giving money to people, and that's been kind of poo-poo. That's what some other countries have done.
Hungary, specifically.
Hungary, yeah. Yeah. But, yeah, I think not being able to access it, I think, helps, would cut down on the fraud. Because it's generally what you worry about is, the first thing is the fraud. The other thing is you'd have to borrow
the money. We don't have
any money,
obviously. Yeah, so keep in mind.
But it would, for some people, I think it might help, but it's not, the problem is that it's no immediate help.
Yeah, and to accomplish that, what the bill includes is an increase in the child tax credit.
Yes.
From $2,000 to $2,500. So that certainly helps a little bit, but children are expensive.
Expensive, and with, you know, both parents working a lot of times.
Yep.
And the cost of child care, to be honest with you, it's a barrier.
Yeah, no doubt. And now the Democrats have been talking about free child care program to those who would qualify, not just child tax and child care tax credits, but like, we'll just pay for your child care. as a way to address that issue. And, of course, one of the concerns is that we're not reproducing, we're not propagating to the level we need to. Elon Musk has actually said, if we don't start reproducing more, we're going to run out of people. He's actually said that. And it is true that the birth rate's way down. Japan, China, yeah, they're all struggling with that phenomenon. We're coming right back with the final segment of Midday. Stay with us.
Up a minute.
Are we going to do this?
Middays with Gerard Gibbert.
Keep rolling. 3, 2, 1.
On Super Talk, Mississippi.
Welcome back, everyone. A little Def Leppard. There you go. All right, we're back with you. The Dow has turned around into green now, so maybe some of the profit-taking has been sifted through the markets today, and investors are reinvesting. It's money coming off the sidelines, so that's a good deal. They're Democrats. Do you expect anything else? They wouldn't know the truth if it slapped them upside the heath. The head, I think, is what was meant there. And that's really talking about this cover-up. What I think appears to be a cover-up of Joe Biden's prostate cancer diagnosis. It broke over the weekend. And, of course, it was in advance of books coming out and the video reports that include sound, which clearly reflect that the president was struggling from a mental acuity perspective, and they didn't want that out while he was president, or at least for a time, a candidate for re-election. Amanda from Pike County, they tried to cover it up. Everyone could see something was wrong, whether they wanted to admit it or not. Yeah, we played for – I agree. We played for you the montage earlier today featuring many in Biden's inner circle there that – just maintain he was just at the top of his game, sharp as a tack, and detailed-oriented and probing and all that sort of crap. And that clearly wasn't the case. Gary in the Berg says, perhaps plot to make Harris the president. Biden steps aside if he wins re-election. She is unelected president. I mean, anything's plausible, Gary. I don't know. It's kind of in the rearview mirror now, but I think what we got to take from it is we can't allow high-ranking people in our government and the media to be so disingenuous. That doesn't serve the country. In fact, it harms the country. Got to be honest about everything, painfully honest. Even when the news is bad, you got to get it out there and address it. And they refuse to do it, I believe, in the name of political selfishness and political expediency. And that's a sad state of affairs in the country, in my view, that we've gotten to that point where there's such a desire, such a strong coveting of public office. Shouldn't be that way. It's now beyond true service.
Yeah.
And I think it's because they seek the fame, the spoils, the notoriety, the power, the limelight. They just can't imagine life without that. And I think that's what's going on here. Brian and Madison, the Democrats are excellent minions. They are all in and on the same script and playbook. They're pretty good about that. I agree, Brian. The only way they could look worse is if they were saying the same lines word for word. Sometimes they do, as you know. Well, it's like, oh, yeah, this is what we've tested, right? These are the words. These are the phrases. This is the language that works. Go out there and promote that.
Oh, you see it when the talking points go out.
No, big time. This is what happens when you have people that hate one man more than they love their country, says Johnny in West Point. Agree. What would happen if we got rid of the Federal Reserve? We'll have to get that on another day. That's a complicated question, but I get it. Ben from Madison says, I really hope they address the SALT deduction, too. The red states shouldn't be subsidizing the high-tax blue states, which was the original idea, Ben, when the SALT deduction was limited to $10,000 in the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. This draft, as it stands right now, increases that to $30,000, and that has been met with the chagrin of many in the Republicans in the high-tax blue states. And the idea was, well, if we take away this this complete full deduction and limit it to $10,000, maybe these states will get their act together and lower their taxes. Unfortunately, that did not happen. On the C Spire text line concerning my my drummer gig here, Freebird. I'm going to be, by the way, I told you that, on the coast playing this coming Thursday. I believe that's going to be at Centennial Plaza, if I'm not mistaken. And that's the One Coast event. That ought to be a whole bunch of fun. So, yep, Centennial Plaza in Gulfport. I'll be playing with the mayor of Pascagoula, Jay Willis. We'll be featured on the couple of tunes we'll be playing as well. Gerard's third career, rock drummer. Man, I don't know about that. And someone asked, Steven Madison, what drum kit I got. I got DW, five shells, three zildjian cymbals, and then, of course, a hi-hat. Man, those things are expensive. There ain't no doubt. But it's good stuff. A lot better than I am. Ricky in Aberdeen was talking about the announcement you shared with us, Will. Modine and Grenada. Appreciate that. Karen in Oxford said, other than 2 cent lower gas prices for about 5 minutes. Folks, we're out of here today. Back with you again tomorrow. Until then, please stay safe and God bless everyone.
Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.